Hello, everyone, and welcome to another special weekend edition of Movie Around Minute. Today we are dealing with, at the minute 92 of season 10, on Movie Around Minute, the podcast where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Niall McGowan of the Bat Minute. Welcome back to the show, Niall.
Oh, thank you very much, Rob. I'm very pleased to be crouched down here with you in this horrible, dank subway where we're recording live in the dark. It's always a pleasure.
Well, you know, you might get a state funeral, so you never know.
I was going to get that whole thing, like, oh, the mayor showing up at your funeral, like, oh, that mayor. Okay.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, minute 92 begins with the hippie nodding, and ends with Garber getting confused by a question.
Hmm.
So we ended things yesterday with Mr. Blue asking this the hippie, the undercover cop, "Are you a policeman?" And you know he's not even able to respond verbally. He just shakes his head and like says type of thing. And then yeah. Blue says, "Well then, the mayor will go to your funeral." And he starts pointing the gun at him. And so it's interesting. It's an interesting. Comment for him to put it this way. So what do you know about state funerals?
I don't know much, to be honest with you, because we don't really, we do get them over here. That's what we would get, like I think it would have to be someone of a massive deal would get, like, you know, people of relative importance showing up. But like, I don't know, you know, because I come from a small town and stuff. I don't know, we tend to, like, the mayor would show up to anything. Really, half the time I didn't even think we had a mayor.
I just like people, it's that's what the people feel in New York City at this point.
Yeah, you know, I like the vibe that this seems to truly indicate that Mr. Blue is from out of town, and the fact that he would think that would be a compliment to be like, you know, the mayor will, unless this is supposed to be like the final jab at this undercover cop is like, well, the mayor is going to show up at your funeral, like, ah, not that.
Exactly. Well, that's more or less what the idea is here.
Yeah, yeah. And you can tell too that, like, imagine getting that mayor to even show up for that funeral is going to be a whole morning of like, you got to put it on your shoes, it's like, I can't, I'm telling you, I'm thick like a door, I tell you, get down to that ass funeral, like, oh, stupid cops died all over the place, and I have such a firm place in my heart for Lee Wallace, because we spent so much time with him in 89, but then, yeah, didn't notice until...
you knew that when he lost the election in New York, so he went and ran for the mayor of Gotham. So therefore, yeah, he was there for,
And then we did note one of our major big first things in the opening minutes of Batman Returns: Mayor Borg no longer there. It's like he handled that Joker scenario so poorly that he had to, you know, hand over Law and Order to a masked vigilante and then just step back, and then they got friggin' Mike Murphy to come in and take over for him. So and he's not even in contention. The mayoral, right, like, you know, the Penguin's running for mayor. Mayor Borg is nowhere to be seen. There's no mention of him. It's like, let's just forget he ever happened.
It was Oswald Cobblepot. It wasn't the Penguin. Come on.
That is true. He's a man. He has a name. Oswald Cobblepot. But Lee Wallace, though, like, just phenomenal. But I hadn't noticed until this walkthrough that it's Marie from Everybody Loves Raymond. It's his wife. It's like, I never put that together. So it's like, oh, man, no wonder the city's falling apart. That's the mayor's wife is friggin' Marie. But and also, too, I know that she... because in recent months I have, you know, I came across another Walter Matthau film called A New Leaf, and she's also on that as well. And she's also a pain in the ass prick of a character in that too. So Yeah, Doris Roberts has been following me throughout the 2025 for some reason. But yeah. But no, state funerals. No, I don't know a lot about state funerals, unfortunately. Or perhaps fortunately. Maybe it's a good thing that I don't know that.
That's probably true. So in England or in the UK, they only do state funerals for royalty.
Yeah, that feels right. That feels right, yeah.
So the obviously the state funerals that are well known are they in 2022 they had for Elizabeth II, 2021 they had for Prince Philip, 2013 they actually had for Margaret Thatcher. Which is somewhat interesting that she would, that she wasn't royalty, but she still had a state funeral.
Yeah.
1997,
Somebody, perhaps
Princess
a
Diana.
politician, perhaps almost as hated as the mayor of New York in the taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3. Like,
Potentially,
I think,
potentially.
yeah, because I know it might be because of my bubble that I'm in, because I'm in, I'm mostly Irish and I moved over to Liverpool, which is a very left-leaning city. But like, I don't know what the perception of her is outside of England and then like, the States or elsewhere. But like Margaret Thatcher to me is like one of the most detested people to ever exist. And the fact that yeah, like there was a fork out money for a state funeral for her back then, it was probably I'm like sure I wasn't living in Liverpool. I was 2013. No, I was living in Liverpool then. I don't remember, but I imagine though people would have been livid that there was any tax money going towards giving that lady anything more than a standard cardboard box to put her in. So, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. And then 1997, Diana, Princess Diana, she had a state funeral. The state funeral before that was 32 years earlier for Winston Churchill in 1965. Before that, you had George the Sixth, George the Fifth, Edward the Seventh, and Queen Victoria. Those are the ones that are mentioned in this article.
Okay.
In the U.S., they generally have waited. They basically have do state did state funerals for people in the that the you know for presidents, former presidents, president-elect, high government officials, and other civilians who have rendered distinguished service to the nation. And the list of people who have had state funerals, is quite a long list. So we're not going to go through the entire list. That would be somewhat defeatism
Yeah.
to show the entire list of people who but it goes all the way back to William Henry Harrison. He was
Wow. He
the
died
first
in
one.
30 days, I know from that
That's right.
one song in The Simpsons.
There you go. Obviously, the most recent one was Jimmy Carter in
Oh.
2025 this year. So
I forgot.
not every
Just good.
president has had it. So it's interesting.
Oh, did Nixon get one?
No, Nixon did not have one,
Ah,
according to this
that's
list.
why I figured that might have been the case, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Let's put it this way. According to this article, the state funerals are held in Washington. So just going backwards, you have Jimmy Carter, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, George H.W. Bush, Gerald Ford, Reagan, Lyndon Johnson, Dwight Eisenhower, Herbert Hoover, Douglas MacArthur, John F. Kennedy, the unknown soldiers of both World War II and the Korean War, Pershing, William Howard Taft, the unknown soldier of World War I, Warren Harding, William McKinley, James Garfield, Abraham Lincoln, Zachary Taylor, and William Henry Harrison. So there's a lot of presidents who didn't have state funerals, which is very
Yeah.
interesting and surprising.
It's it's a good, in many ways I go if they did it by choice. Well, I guess they didn't have the choice because of their
Well,
dad,
I don't think
but if they
it depends by whose choice.
Yeah. That well, it could be the thing. Maybe they put in like the will too. It was like I don't want a state funeral, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, maybe they were doing it for more like, ah, you don't need to go through all the. I can almost respect a like, you don't have to do the whole rigmarole for me. Like, it's, you don't have to spend all that money and dressing up all this stuff just to do this. Like, they might have been, maybe it was a matter of humbleness that they didn't want state funerals. Like, William Henry Harrison might have been like, I mean, come on, he wasn't even here a month. Like, what are we forking out for this guy for? Come on, he didn't even do anything. Get out of here. But you said Lincoln didn't have one.
Lincoln had one. Yeah, Lincoln did have one.
Oh, Lincoln did have one. Okay, sorry. I thought that might have been, yeah. No, because I was like, Jesus, Louise, he didn't have one. Jesus Christ. But yeah. Have you ever attended a state funeral in your time, Rob? No.
No. No, I'm not a funeral person. I try and stay away from them
Yeah.
as much as I can.
You're like, I'm not a funeral person. I tend to know people who don't die. I try to befriend people who live for long times because I can't be bothered going to funerals.
Well,
It's not my scene. I
you
don't
know,
want to have to do that, so I just
as the
avoid.
thing goes, everyone dies. No one's gonna be able to get out of here alive.
Yeah. I mean, including Mr. Blue, as we'll see next month. But spoilers for that. Yeah. And then thank God for the athletic tenacity of Walter Matthau, though, because he Garber manages to come in. I do have to actually ask the question though, because I have seen this film a bunch. But like, Blue coming over to kill this cop, is this supposed to be like a moment of kind of hubris, or like him pushing things too far? Because he always has everything planned down to the letter, and then obviously this cop kind of took him by surprise. But I kind of feel like he could have been out of there. Like, is it like, is he going there like, oh, I was going that way anyway, I'm just going to stop to kill this guy? Or is it more like, I could run, I could be out of there, but I feel I need to go over, and just whatever cruel streak he's got in him is like, I just want to be able to. Or is it him cleaning the house and been like, if this guy has been on the train with me the entire time and he gets out alive, like, that's gonna be, he might be able to ID us somehow. But all the other hostages would be able to ID him, so that wouldn't make any sense. So, they would be the whole point of the disguises and stuff was that so Bill. So yeah, but why do you think he goes over in particular to kill this guy rather than just go, all right, like, I stick to my own guns and just get out of here as fast as possible.
Because he's a witness.
Yeah, but like, but everyone in the train's witnesses as well, right? So.
But they're not witnesses to their escape route and where they've gone, and
Nah.
they've all taken off their mustaches.
Okay. All right. It's like, yeah, they changed out of a coat into a different coat. It turns out that he didn't have a mustache. Like, wow. It's like, but no, what you're saying makes perfect sense. But yeah. I was just wondering if it was supposed to be a bit of a hubristic, like, this guy's getting too cocky, and he's like, oh, I've got time. I'll go over and kill this guy.
No, but I think it also has to do with the fact that Mr. Blue looks at him and basically says to himself that they still want to show us the ruthlessness of Mr. Blue. He's been calm and collective the whole time. But
Yeah.
this cop just killed Mr. Brown.
Yeah.
So it's
Yeah.
very possible that, I mean, again, this is pure speculation, that Mr. Blue had some sort of background with Mr. Brown, and this is a way of him avenging Mr. Brown.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
You
we
almost
talked
kind of
yesterday
the.
about the whole fact that he definitely doesn't have any connection with Mr. Gray, but from his rapport with Mr. Brown, it is conceivable that there is some sort of background between the two of them.
Yeah. Could also be just like a little bit of contempt as well. Just then, like, by specifically asking him, like, are you a policeman? He just wants to be like, I just want to make sure that you're a cop, because maybe he just would relish killing a cop in that instance. Something like, maybe he had, whatever in his own background is like, yeah, he might have been through the ringer with the with police in the past. And he's just like, yeah, I really want to make sure that that's what. Or it could also just be for his own. Presumably for his own curiosity, have been like, just so I know everything that's been happening here, you're a cop, right? And that's what's going down, sort of thing. rather than you look like you're some sort of random hippie, and now and now all of a sudden you have a gun and you killed this other guy I was working with. But yeah, there's a I think I detect there is a little hint of cruelty in this sort of like, are you a policeman? You know, when he comes over to very callously, you know,
Because it's an
kill this
execution.
guy, you know?
This is an execution. This isn't, you know. I mean, then again, you know, when he killed Bud, that was also an execution. And I guess Kaz, when Mr. Gray killed him, wasn't really an execution. That was just being trigger happy.
But yeah, there's a the thing is that it feels very slow and deliberate what he's doing though. Because again, he could have been like, "Oh, I need to kill this guy." He could have like, you can kind of see where he is over there. He could just like fire a bullet over and just like, you know, shoot him from a distance a couple of times. So it's like, okay, I'll just take it on point that that's him dead. But it's the casual stroll over and the kind of like, you know, talking to him for a second, really, and it feels like he's got a real, there's, you know, we know there's a coldness to Blue anyway. There's a blue steel to him in many ways. But yeah, the feel like this, it feels almost now as like it's he's messing himself up slightly by going over and being taking a moment to like seemingly kind of relish this execution. So yeah, I wasn't too sure if it was supposed to be like a moment of him not following his regimental thing and it actually messing him up. Because if he had just got out of there, he could have avoided Garber, and he would have got away with everything. But yeah.
Right, but he's, but you know, as you said, he's sure of himself that nobody's able to catch on.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
the problem. You know, he's far too sure of himself with
Yeah.
that.
It's
And then Garber shows up and saves the day, and you know, I like the way they do this because it surprises us also. Where Garber says, "We you just hear from the distance, excuse me, fella, would you mind dropping that gun and turning around, please? Drop it." And you know, he thinks for a second and then he does actually drop the gun.
It's
Which doesn't make any sense.
well, that's the thing. Like, I've kind of hemmed and hawed over this as well. The fact that you know, in that moment, you think like, well, I'm gonna because of what he does next, you know, or
Exactly.
what he does in the next minute. But I think it is like he does. I think it's his line about like, you know, could I interest you in $250,000? I think there is a little bit of him like, if I can get away with bribing this guy, then that's me done. So I think that's the reason he throws away the gun is because like, I've got one last option, and then there's only one way out of this. So I think that's the only way I can rationalize him throwing away the gun is like he's like, I don't want to die, but I'm gonna have to unless I can throw out this last one, you know, this last gambit and see if I can smooth this dude into taking, you know, $250,000. But yeah.
Right. And Garber then takes his time to walk over there. Takes him about 10 seconds to walk over. And then Blue says, "Officer, I suppose you couldn't use $250,000, could you?" And Garber looks at him and goes, "$250,000? No thanks. My accountant says I've accepted enough for this fiscal quarter."
Which is a
A great line.
what it's a great line, but I was trying to think like, do accountants ever say that you've accepted enough money? Like, I'm sure because maybe because you know I used to have to do my own accounts when I was a freelancer for years, but I don't know if I ever would have been like, oh, I've taken too much money in this fiscal quarter. I think I would have been like, oh, great, yeah, but I don't know if is it supposed to be like maybe a hint of it is a joke about bribes or something like. If he's like, oh, my accountant says I've accepted too much for this fiscal quarter, so it's like, yeah, if I accept any more bribes, then like they're gonna start noticing that something's
That's
up.
actually very interesting. I never thought about it from that perspective because you never think of Garber as being corrupt.
No.
But I like where you go with that.
Yeah. I have to say he has great strength of character in that like it never even he's not fazed by that at all. Like someone offering him, you know, I can give you $250,000, and he's just like, nope. Just never once like vaguely entertains the thought of taking that. He's just like, no, not a chance. Like, you know, I'm sure he's underpaid. I'm sure he's miserable. I'm sure his apartment's a dump. look at his hat. Look at his droopy hat. You know that guy. People who are well off don't have hats that droopy. Like that's just an international rule. But yeah, I appreciate him as a strength of character that this guy, this literally droopy in that droopy based on Walter Matthau, kind of dogged or like dogged down guy, who kind of looks like yeah he's just been working blue collar schlub for the 50 odd years he's been on Earth, but yeah it would never even occur to him to actually accept a bribe in a scenario
Exactly.
because yeah no.
And then he says, "You're the English guy on the radio." Duh.
I was surprised though that Mr. Blues is like, no, my name's Clay, Bill Clay.
That's
Like,
right.
oh, Mr. Clay, have you seen an English guy running past here?
And why are you barefoot? He goes, "Yes." And then he looks at him and goes, "Lieutenant Garber?" And he goes, "Right." And he moves the gun a little bit and says, "You want to move along?" And at this point, we also see that the cop is still lying on the ground. He was preparing himself for death with this whole thing.
It's a, I do think it's slightly odd in that then because we never get to know this cop, et cetera, like him being saved. It feels like a more high octane action films, potentially like the Tony Scott remake of the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. You'd have bonded with this guy, and it would be a big deal that Garber manages to save him. But it's just more like, yeah, he's just one of the people. But like, whether he lived or died, I don't feel would have been it wouldn't have had much of emotional impact. Like, it's nice that Garber gets like a proper hero moment of being able to like stop an execution from happening. But doesn't have that same, movie thing of like, oh, it's this young kid that we've been following the whole time, and we, like the Garber talked to him this morning before he got on the, before he went undercover and got on the train and stuff like that. There's an emotional connection between these people. It's just very much he's just like, yeah, he just manages to stop him, kill him, this, this literally a guy just called the hippie, and, as we see next minute, kind of takes a little shot at him himself on his way out. But yeah, just thought that was a but there's a harshness to the films of the 70s, so maybe it's supposed to be like, yeah, it doesn't particularly this guy, much like the rest of the hostages, they're one dimensional, they don't particularly matter, beyond being pieces to move around in the main game that's going on here.
And then Mr. Blue, as he's as he realizes he's basically been checkmated, he goes, "Excuse me, people still execute in this state?" And Garber is caught a little off guard by it, and he goes, "What? Oh, execute?" And then he gets cut off. People are going to
He's
have
just
to go get some oil.
Garber
Find
just
out.
been like, or Mr. Blue just throw out a bit of like a, well, I mean, we all agree. Like, I was just coming over to take part in the tried and true New York custom of execution, right? Of just shooting this dude straight in the head. He's like, no, we don't do that here anymore. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize I'm not from around here. You understand? So, by all means, I misunderstood, officer. I'll walk away now.
Again, we'll talk more about it tomorrow, when it comes to
I
that.
also appreciate too that he does the very English thing of calling him lieutenant. It's like
That's right.
lieutenant, lieutenant. Yeah,
That's
it's
right.
always very like, oh, because it never makes any sense to me that the very prim and proper English people pronounce it lieutenant, but like I appreciated that it was a thing in there because it's like I do think that's just the way that Robert Shaw talks. I don't know if that's a deliberate choice he's made to like make him extra upper crust sounding, but yeah,
Well,
I do appreciate that it's in there.
it's not as if it's hard to pronounce lieutenant. They call it lieutenant because I guess that was the way that the rank was referred to, in the British Army. I assume that's what it is. It's not like it's a word that, oh, you know what? That's one of those words that I can't pronounce. So I'm just gonna say lieutenant instead of lieutenant, that type of thing. So
I mean, and when someone's like in, oh, in lieu of, English people don't go in left of, and it's spelled the same way. So it's like lieutenant, it makes no damn sense. I don't know why they do that.
Correct. All right. So, because once again, on Sundays we don't have a normal segment, but since Niall will not be here on Thursday, so today we're gonna actually do another game of 70s movie trivia. All right,
All right.
where I'm gonna randomly ask you a trivia question about a movie from the 1970s. So we will once again spin the wheel and see what five questions Niall's going to get. So let's spin the wheel, and around and around and around the wheel goes. All right. Okay, in what 1973 movie did Ellen Burstyn play the mother of Linda Blair?
Like The Exorcist. I think that love affair one from the other day really shook me. Like, oh my God, these are gonna be impossible. And I was like, oh, okay.
Okay, see, that was good. All right, let's spin the wheel again
Yep.
for your next question. All right. What famous director was originally approached to direct the movie The Godfather and turned it down?
Ooh, I feel like there's probably like a load of them. It's the thing.
All right, so I'm gonna give you a little more information about it, okay? So this
Okay.
director was approached to direct the film, but turned it down since he felt that the story, which glorified the mafia, was not interesting enough. He later regretted refusing the offer, but would go on to direct his own critically acclaimed gangster movie 10 years later.
It's not like Sergio Leone, maybe?
Yes, it is. Yes, it
Hey,
is.
there you go. There you go.
Excellent.
We
All right.
did it, baby.
You got two for two so far. Let's spin the wheel again and see what you get. Around and around and around the wheel goes. All right. What famous couple met, fell in love, and got married during the filming of the movie Time After Time?
It was Malcolm McDowell and Mary Steenburgen, I want to
That's
say.
right. Excellent.
There you go. There you go. So I only watched Time After Time for the first time, like maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And I knew that she was with Ted Danson because of Curb Your Enthusiasm, because they appear in that, as a couple. And then when I looked it up and I was like, she was married to Malcolm McDowell. I was like, how did I never know that? That's crazy.
Exactly.
And then I was just like, why isn't Malcolm McDowell on Curb Your Enthusiasm as her ex? Like, that'd be Malcolm McDowell versus Larry David is a thing I just need to see
That's
in
true.
life in general.
That's
But
great.
that's a great film too. I remember always hearing of the plot line, but like, that sounds stupid. What a stupid film. And then when I watched it, I was like, oh, it's great. I absolutely loved it.
All right, let's spin the wheel again for your next question. And it's not going to be about love affair. Okay, in the 1979 movie The Warriors, who are the Warriors?
Like, who are the actors who play them, or
No,
just what?
what
Who are the Warriors?
is a warrior? What is the Warriors?
Well, they're like a street gang, right? But
That's
they're,
right. There you go. That's the
yeah.
answer.
That's what I was reading. I was panicking next. It's like the only person I can remember being in the Warriors is David Patrick Kelly, and he's not one of the Warriors. So I was like, oh boy, that's gonna be tough.
Exactly. All right. And now we will spin the wheel for one final time. Let's see what your last question will be.
Let's go 5 out of 5, baby.
And it won't be about love affair. You don't have to worry about that.
Oh. You're really building this up now. It's been like, it's gonna be about love affair, isn't it? Like, it's gonna.
What 1970 film was all about the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor?
Ooh, I want to say Tora, Tora, Tora.
And you would be correct.
Hey, there we go. I was slightly panicked there because I thought that might have been 60s. I was like, oh, but that was the only one that came to mind. I was like, I guess I'm. All right, let's take a swing at that one then.
And you got it right.
Hey, fantastic, fantastic.
All right, so let's once again play the daily game of Name That Remake. Let's spin the wheel once again and see what
Yeah.
Niall gets. And
While the wheel is spinning, do also have to
let's hope it's
for my
not going to
format.
be love affair again, right?
Yeah. Oh, of course. But also, because I can never let an everything's connected go. Should point out there that Martin Balsam is of course in Tora Tora Tora.
That is
So
correct.
we have a bit of connective tissue there
There you
between movies.
go. Exactly. All right. Around and around and around the wheel goes. Right. Okay. This original movie came out in 1951, and the remake came out in 1995. These are both actually sequels. Okay, this is a sequel that was remade as a sequel.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Cool.
A set of parents must now deal with the fact that their child is about to have a new baby.
Is it the father of the bride part two?
That's the remake, yes. Do you know what the
Yeah.
original name of the original sequel was? With Spencer Pierce from 1951.
Is it two fathers, two brides, two bride, father of the bride, two bride harder?
No, it was called the Father's Little Dividend.
Oh, I never knew that. I
Yeah.
was like, now I'm kind of slightly disappointed that the Steve Martin version wasn't called that. That's a way more memorable title.
Right. The Steve Martin version, I didn't like some of the things that they did in it. They took it to some very strange places,
I remember
by
me
having
and
the
my friend.
mother also be pregnant and stuff like that. When the original movie with Spencer Tracy deals more with the fact of becoming a grandfather as opposed to just becoming being the father of the bride type of thing.
Yeah. No, I remember Father the Bride Part Two because me and my friend Davey, we watched a couple times because he's a guy who loves 90s family films. And I remember us, like, at the time we were in our early 20s the last time I watched it, and we were both like penniless. Because we're just fresh graduates, scraping for jobs and stuff like that. And I remember getting really resentful of the fact that like Steve Martin's just like he's so rich in that film. He's so like he's supposed to be like a middle class guy, but he's so goddamn rich in that film. The
Well, because
amount of money he
he
spends.
makes sneakers.
And again, the whole thing too, where he's like, I remember there's a bit where he says, "Oh yeah, I needed to catch up on some sleep, so I just went to the office for a few hours." And you just see him snoozing in his office, and we're just like, "This, God damn it! Like, what the hell's going on?" It really left a bad taste in our mouths because we were just like so desperate for work. We're like, "What do you mean he goes to the office to get some sleep? Jesus Christ!" And then it's a bit, when I think Martin Short's showing him the price of the baby shower, and he's just like, "Oh, don't open it in front of me." Okay, it's so much. I don't want you to see. And we're just like, God, rich ass. I've not watched it since then. I just remember those scenes and the fact that Jane Addams from Frasier is she delivers the baby. I remember being like, "Oh, hey, it's Mel from Frasier." Yeah. But yeah, those are very random tidbits you didn't need to know about my relationship with Father of the Bride Part Two.
That's
But
all right.
there we go. At least I got it though. Okay, I'll take. Could we have that like a 3/4 of a point if it's
Yes.
we
Yes.
kind of got there, but it was a little bit off.
No, that's good. That's good. That's good. All
Yeah.
right. So, Niall, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Niall McGowan?
Yeah. I'll plug my other show. That me and John, my co-host on Batman, did. We also did Miami Minutes, which is where we broke down and talked about each minute of the craptacular Taekwondo classic, Miami Connection, 1 minute at a time. And if people haven't heard of Miami Connection, I highly advise you to look it up and just even just bask in the backstory of its making, which was incredible. And then we have we did every single minute. It was last year, or maybe the year before now. It's one of the ones that's like. it's so weird to have a show that you've let go of. We're like, yeah, we're all in it for like so long. And then we're like, oh yeah, that's done. It's still in a little box over there. Please come and have a look at it. And we're trying to figure out something to do for season two for it. We've got several irons in the fire, but Bat Minute is taking precedent at the minute. And also that like we're both full-time jobs and stuff, so we're just like trying to schedule everything in. It's been a lot more difficult because I used to be a freelancer, so I used to be able to just drop and do things whenever I needed to. But yeah, Miami Connection or Miami Minutes, fantastic show. Very proud of it. It's a lot sillier than Bat Minute because Bat Minute involves a lot of research and us trying to like be somewhat educational beyond all the fun. Whereas no one in Miami Connection went on to do anything, so it's just us riffing on the movie for 87 episodes or something. And it was a great time, so I highly advise people to go in and to check it out.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie on Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieonminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieonminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, achoo!
Resort Act.